Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Text line, you want to get involved? You want to interact or just have me tell you whatever. 251-343-0106. Still to come on the program about an hour from now. My friend Scott Butcher from the Trustful Tribune will make some time for us. And in the 11 o'clock hour, Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall for his weekly visit. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Joining us now on the line, he is formerly a congressman for the 5th Congressional District. Always a always been good to this show and always appreciative of his time. But former Congressman Mo Brooks is with us. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. This stuff where I'm retired and I get to play with 14 grandkids and 8 kids and kids-in-law and my wife. I should have thought of this earlier.
Hey, and I guess right now it's Epstein mania on Capitol Hill. My complaint with that is not that I'm, you know, release the files, do whatever you got to do, but Republicans scored a win on the shutdown, and they've let Democrats kind of take control of the narrative on the heels of that. And here we are. I mean, the Democrats have made Epstein the issue instead of how terrible they were with the shutdown.
Well, certainly the Epstein saga has not, in the media, worked in favor of Republicans, nor in favor of Donald Trump. I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on the shutdown. While the Republicans have done a better job of marketing the shutdown than the Democrats appeared to have been able to do, I say a pox on both their houses. The Democrats caused this economic damage from the shutdown by not voting for a regular continuing resolution, but the Republicans also caused it by not using the power of the majority that the people gave them to pass a funding bill back in September when it was supposed to be funded. And then finally, for 29 straight years now, regardless of which party is in power, none of them have passed these spending bills that are supposed to be passed by the end of the fiscal year, which is September 30th. So we've got roughly 3 decades of failures by both political parties when it comes to passing the spending bills on time that keep the government function and minimize or eliminate the risk of government shutdowns.
Do you think we'll ever get back to that? Is it realistic to think that you will end this cycle?
Well, if the American people demand it, absolutely. But if the American people don't, then the special interests are going to continue to profit from the spending system that they've set up where they can get their special deals in these huge, massive spending bills that are often passed right before Christmas or New Year's when the public's not paying attention. And so the dirty deeds can more easily be done without adverse political ramifications for the incumbents who did them.
Well, and it's just that, though. The American people don't seem like they ever really are – they don't seem like they're clamoring for this at all. It doesn't seem like it's important enough to them. And that's I guess that's the problem, right? That, you know, maybe it's just a lack of awareness or whatever that this is the – as long as the status quo keeps operating, people will kind of shrug it off.
Well, you're right. And I think they will discover the error of their ways as voters – when we suffer through a very damaging national insolvency and bankruptcy because of our $38 trillion debt that is rapidly growing, getting worse because of public inattention.
Yeah, well, you know, like you said, it's going to have to be some kind of calamity, I think, that will get people's attention. But to me, you know, we've been talking about this, you've been talking about this as long as you were in Congress, and it's just – you know, that it is just too heavy of a lift for these politicians.
That's because they're not interested in doing what's best for America. I wish they were, but their priority is themselves and getting elected.
Yeah, it's just a system we're in right now. And you know, I don't know what how this ever resolves itself, but I'm not optimistic. Hey, by the way, the Epstein stuff. Do you have a thought on the vote on this? Do you think this is the right course of action?
Well, the taxpayers paid for it. Yeah, they ought to see what is the result of the investigation that they paid for. Kind of makes sense to me. Yeah. I think there are much bigger public policy issues out there, but this one has sex. It has rich and powerful. It has all the kind of drama that the voters often see on soap operas and at the movie theaters. So their interest is relatively keen on Epstein and all the shenanigans Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, and their buddies were involved in with these underage girls.
Well, I mean, like, assume we find out something that we don't already know. I am very, Congressman, I'm very skeptical that we'll ever know the whole story here. I don't think we will. But let's just say that the Congress goes through with this, Trump signs it into law, and we start finding out that this was some kind of foreign intelligence, you know, gathering thing or something like that. I mean, then what? Then what do you do?
Yeah, well, you get to the issue of, what are the public policy ramifications of whatever comes out from Epstein? And quite frankly, I'm skeptical that anything productive is going to come out of it. We already have laws that make it illegal to engage in pedophilia with young girls. That those laws are already on the books. So it doesn't do any good to pass them again. You already got them. And you've got Epstein. He was convicted. I think he was convicted. He certainly was in jail. And you've got Ghislaine Maxwell. She's been convicted. So the law has pretty much worked as it's supposed to work, with the exception of perhaps some of these high-profile individuals, if they were engaged in, say, statutory rape because of their interactions with minor females.
Joined by Congressman Mo, former Congressman Mo Brooks here on the program. Let's talk about the 26th and, you know, we started out in 25, and I heard this from a lot of people. Look, we're you know, Trump's the exception to the rule. He's doing so well, and the first 100 days have been so fantastic. The Republicans could pick up even more seats in the House, and you heard this, and even some of your former colleagues are still in the House are saying that. I just think history will prevail. Two Tuesdays ago, Democrats won. They were supposed to win, although, you know, California – New York city, that is, and you know, we expected Northern Virginia, but the New Jersey, the margins suggest to me that history will prevail, and 26 will be a Democrat year, as it usually goes on these off-cycle elections.
Well, here are the historical probabilities, and they're consistent with what you just said. Historically, the party that is out of power in midterm elections far more often than not gain seats in the House, the Senate, or both. That's the history of it. And then you've got another history with Donald Trump. Donald Trump, when he is a candidate who is not president, the Republicans have done well in 2016 and in 2024. But when Donald Trump is the leader of the Republican Party as president, he's 0 for 4. The Republicans lost in 2017. And a number of elections around the country. The Republicans lost in 2018 when we lost the House of Representatives and Nancy Pelosi became Speaker of the House again. The Republicans lost in 2020 under Donald Trump's leadership, where we lost the House, the Senate, and the White House. And then for the fourth consecutive time, when Donald Trump is the leader of the Republican Party as the president, we lost in 2025. And Virginia and in New Jersey and New York City and ballot initiatives in California, Georgia, and elsewhere. So his track record is not very good when it comes to winning when he is the leader of the ticket as the incumbent president. Different when he's not a president and he's running from a non-presidential position like he did in 2016 and 2024. So you've got those kinds of histories. And is it possible for Republicans to do well? Yes. Is it likely? Historically, no.
No, I don't think it is. And I mean, we just need to be like not expecting the unexpected here. Expect the expected And I think Democrats, I do think there's a shot that Republicans could hold on to the Senate. It's a very tough map, and you know, Georgia is a potential pickup. But the House, it's, the margins are too small that all Democrats need are a handful of votes. And I think they can get that pretty easily. It's just the Democrats are more motivated than Republicans right now.
Well, no question. There are three different groups of voters in America right now. But the largest blocks are those that hate Donald Trump or love Donald Trump. And the smallest block is that little group of people that don't have much of an opinion one way or the other. But the people who hate Donald Trump, they will crawl over red hot coals to get to the polls. And so their turnout tends to be larger than it does for Republicans or the people who don't have a strong opinion one way or another. And you saw that in the elections 2 weeks ago. The Democrat turnout was superior to the Republican turnout. And as a result, the Democrats not only won, often in places they're expected to win, but they won by huge margins. Like in New York City, the mayor's race, people may not think of it like this, but perhaps they should. It wasn't just Mom Dimony who got elected, but you had Cuomo, another Democrat, who came in second. And the Republican was around 10% or less. You know, the Republican nominee getting 10% or less in an election is horrific.
Well, I mean, like Staten Island, it goes Republican, went for Cuomo. I mean, I think Republicans just said that the Republican nominee has zero chance, and our best bet would be Andrew Cuomo, unfortunately. And that's really sad. You think about Andrew Cuomo and all the COVID protocol and all of that, and that was the best they could do in New York City. But, like, a bunch of these other races, House of Delegates of Virginia picked up, like, 11 seats, and the warning signs are there that 2026 will be a Democrat. I don't know about a wave, but it'll be strong enough for Democrats to unseat Johnson and have a new speaker.
Well, if the economy suddenly starts doing better rather than continuing to degrade, or if you have some other major event that intervenes that increases the popularity of President Trump and the Republican candidates, then you have that possibility that the Republicans are able to beat back history. But otherwise, I wish I could say otherwise, but I can't. I have to agree with your analysis. The odds are that the Democrats are going to pick up. That's what history says. And history is buttressed by the economy having gotten worse under Donald Trump. Now, we don't have good economic data over the last 2 months for whatever reason, probably a combination of Donald Trump not warning the information out and the government shutdown. But until then, unemployment had gotten worse by 0.3 points from inauguration day through August 31st. And inflation has gotten worse. We got better back around April or May. But since then, inflation has reared its ugly head. And then you've got the question as to whether the economic numbers are worse rather than accurate. And part of that problem is Donald Trump tending to fire the government data keepers who share data, as they're supposed to do once a month, that Donald Trump disagrees with. Gosh, now, if you don't fudge the numbers in Donald Trump's favor, then you have to get fired. That's the message to all of these government personnel that compile the inflation data, that compile the unemployment data, name it. And that's not a good situation to be in.
Real quick, just a few minutes here in state in Alabama. The fields we have, I guess particularly for U.S. Senate, I think Tommy Tuberville is at this point a pretty heavy favorite to be the next governor. But you got any insights into what's going on in state?
Well, it looks like Tommy Tuberville is going to be our next governor. Personally, I wish he stayed in the Senate. He could have done a whole lot more for the state of Alabama as a senator than as a governor. As you know, we've got a very weak governor. That's what the Constitution has done to our governor's position. Say in Washington with the president, a veto power actually is power. it takes two-thirds vote to override a presidential veto. So suddenly you have a lot of control over public policy matters. But in Montgomery, our governor's veto power is minimal. You just need a majority of the membership of the House and the Senate to override a presidential, the gubernatorial veto. And that's about what it took to pass it in the first instance, to get it on the governor's desk. So but I can understand him leaving Washington. It's not a pleasant environment. Crime rates in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, are horrific. The travel that's involved, now he's a whole lot closer to his home in Auburn and his home in Florida. He's got a beautiful mansion on the Gulf Coast. He can visit it much more easily than as governor than he can as a United States senator. Still, all in all, I think he was a better than average senator, and I wish he'd stayed in Washington. That wasn't his choice. Now, the lieutenant governor's race is really interesting. With A.J. McCarron having gotten in, he's got high name ID. I don't know how that will play out. You've got Wes Allen, who has come up with this brain dead idea of alienating tens of millions of voters around the country by reducing them to a second-class citizenship position. For the life of me, I don't understand the logic behind that. And of that, gosh, somewhere in the neighborhood of 50, 60,000 voters in Alabama, Wes Allen wants to make a second-class citizen. And if they vote as a block against Wes Allen, that could have a significant effect on the lieutenant governor's race. We'll have to see how that plays out. The U.S. Senate race is interesting. I wish we had a candidate that I had confidence would do the right thing on what I believe is far and away our greatest threat, and that's the threat of an insolvency and bankruptcy. But none of them have a track record that shows that they'll do the right thing. So it's kind of a crapshoot. We might get a good one, we might not, but that's where we are in the Senate race. Now, if Feinbaum jumps in, that's going to make it more interesting. Whether it'll make it better, only time will tell.
Congressman, you've been very, very gracious to come on this morning and always generous with your time. Let's do this again real soon.
At your leisure.
Thank you. That was former Congressman Mo Brooks there. We got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.